Yep. Give me a nod when you're ready. Jitter's ready. Stand by.
Hey everyone, welcome to Bullets and Bourbon. This is Matt Gunlock. My co-host cannot be here tonight. He's currently on vacation with his wife overseas, but I have two very special guests, guys I've known for quite a while, since 2016, whenever I shot my very first Blue Ridge three-gun championship. They were guys that were like welcoming, entertaining, a real fun to be around, guys that you just kind of gravitate to. Like, they have a lot of charisma, they're extremely talented, they're really friendly, and they're the kind of people that you want in this sport because they invite people to the sport. So tonight I have Brian Ray and Brian Vaught. So before we kind of get into the questions and everything, we'll start with you, Brian Ray. I'm not going to be able to say, hey, Brian, you start this, because you're both Brian. So, before we get started, can you kind of give us a little background about yourself, when you started competing, some background, where you're from, all that kind of stuff?
Sure. Yeah. And thanks for having us, Matt. We appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Brian Vaught and I guess because I'm first, I'll tell a little bit of the story. We are married to sisters, and that's not a Kentucky joke, but we are related through marriage. And somewhere around 1999, we started shooting USPSA at just local clubs, and we shot that for a few years. And then I guess it was 08 or 09, I hear about Blue Ridge Mountain 3-Gun, and messaged Andy Horner, the match director, and I said, hey, our spectators welcome. And Andy says, he replies back, and he said, sure, but if you want to shoot it, all you have to do is show up and work the match as a range officer, and you get to shoot it for free. So I called Brian Vaught, and I said, you won't believe this. We can shoot for free. All we have to do is show up and work. And
you guys probably didn't realize how much was involved with that.
I think at the end of the match, as we're driving home, we live close enough to what was Rock Castle that we drove down every morning. We worked all day. We drove home. So as we're driving home after the match is over, I can remember having the conversation. We go, you know, F that, we'll pay next year. And then, Brian, how many years did we end up working it?
I worked 11.
I think I worked 10. So, yeah, we didn't learn anything. But so we started shooting USPSA. We got into 3-gun about 08, 09, whichever, the first Blue Ridge at Rock Castle. And then since then, have mostly shot 3-gun and shot pretty much everywhere there's matches.
No, that's awesome. Brian Vaught?
Well, and so Brian tells that story pretty well. Some of it's true and accurate. I get to be the fact checker, I guess. But I don't remember the years, but I do remember that we started shooting USPSA in a little club that was in Bardstown, Kentucky. And I mean, I will say that when we got into that, we were pretty excited about that. That was something that was really, really cool. Brian had only been in guns for a few years. And I remember they had a little side match there. Every other month, there was a guy that used to shoot the Soldier of Fortune matches out west named Joe Taflinger. Wasn't that his name? Right. And he was crazy. He was just, you know, I think he drove trucks for Walmart for his job, and then he had an old white Suburban. And if you had like an Enfield 303 British and you needed a ammo for it, he would reach back in there and he'd pull some out. Like, he had a little bit of everything in there. And he told us about these matches out west that were the Soldier of Fortune, and he brought a little bit of that to our local USPSA club. So you'd shoot the pistol match. And then you'd go over and have a shotgun side match. And then you'd shoot the pistol match. The next month, you'd go over to be a rifle side match. So that was kind of like we had to have a few guns to do that with. So like pump shotgun, M1 carbine. I shot one with M1 carbine one time. Brian probably shot one with a Grand a few times, you know, stuff like that. And then, yeah, his story about the Blue Ridge and how that all unfolded, as I remember it, is correct. I think we actually shot as ROs. The first night we finished, it was after dark. We could actually see sparks flying off the targets if you hit them. But
of course, we Matt, you gotta realize, Matt, that the reason Andy was so receptive for, hey, if you want to work it, you get to shoot for free, to a guy he had never heard of who had never shot three gun before, is because they needed staff that bad. So that's probably part of why it was after dark before we finished shooting.
Well, I remember, you know, it was 2016. I just came back from deployment, and Mike Oberman and I are like really good friends, and you guys know Mike. And I was like, you know, I was coming back. I was like, Mike, I want to shoot this match. I've heard great things about it, but you know, funds right now just aren't there. He's like, well, you know, just hit Andy Horner up, you know, and just ask him, you know, tell him that I vetted you and that you can come RO the match. I was like, awesome. Hit Andy up. He's like, oh, absolutely. You know, just come on out. You know, this is when you need to be here, all that kind of stuff. And this was after Hurricane Nationals, and like the roads haven't been cleaned up, all that kind of stuff. And I'm just driving from North Carolina all the way, you know, to Kentucky. And I think in the 3 days that I RO'd that match, I put in 12 to 15 miles a day easily. Yep. And like by the end of it, you're just like, what the fuck did I get myself into?
Well, and we were hooked on three gun after that, because we signed up for Fort Benning, I think that same year, in December. And we went to Fort Benning, and that was a lot. That was like, you know, at the time, that was one of the five majors that you could shoot. So, and then we started looking for other stuff. I mean, it was just fine matches. And if we had to travel, we traveled. And then kind of things rolled out from there. But I mean, there's been years where we've shot, what, six or seven majors and 20 other small matches. Mm-hmm. And of course, we don't do that anymore. But some of those years were really busy. And there was a lot going on.
Oh, yeah. But, you know, I didn't, like you guys, I didn't learn my lesson. You know, in 17, I was deployed again for the entire year. So I get home in 18, and then with bring the shooting team out to Blue Ridge in 2018. I was like, you know what, in an effort to save money and also give back to the sport, three of us are going to be ROs. The rest of you guys can shoot the main match. Me, of course, I was like, I'll be an RO and all that kind of stuff. And it's like,
I don't remember how hard this was.
Yeah. Again, what did I get myself into? And then in 2019, the last one at Blue Ridge, it was the same thing. It was like, all right, yep, here we go again. And, you know, in 18, I was teamed up with John X and Clive Gamlin. And the Brits are just fun to be around.
Yep.
Just really good people. And then in 2019, I was teamed up with Chris Wiseman. And that was a year they were like kind of short staffed, and like there was one stage that was only going to have two people on a stage instead of three people. And so that was me and Chris Wiseman, and our stage was nothing but uphill. You know, you started with the shotgun, went up the hill into the woods and everything, and you finished probably about 100-150 yards into the woods, and it's everything was just uphill. And it's just like, again, why do I keep doing this to myself?
Yeah. What an interesting contrast in work and people to work with. So you work with the Brits and then you work with Wiseman.
You don't get much.
Chris Wiseman.
Oh yeah. But it's kind of, you know, I think we've kind of established how old we are in this sport.
You know, and you're right. But then kind of like Brian mentioned with Joe Taflinger and shooting the old SOF matches, you know, we came into it relatively early in the history of three gun.
Yeah.
But there was that time period before even we started shooting that, you know, you're talking not pre-internet certainly, but you're probably talking almost pre-YouTube at that point.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that history that, that, you know, you almost have to hear about by word of mouth now. I actually saw some YouTube videos just a couple months ago of some of the early Soldier of Fortune. Of course, this had to have been shot on VHS and then converted to digital format. But, you know, you look at the stages by themselves and you think that really looks boring and bland. But then when you think about it in the context of this was like the first three gun,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's almost like you're watching black and white movies at that point, and you just you're captivated by it because it's like this is where it started.
And you got to think
all
like,
their shotgun targets were buckshot targets because buckshot was all that was allowed.
And it's kind of crazy, you know, because a lot of guys like, you know, like you guys for a long time used M1As, you know, you had pump action shotguns that were buckshot. It's like, these were the early years. These were the guys who carried forward something that we all shoot really fast now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's changed a lot.
Yeah. So, I mean,
think in our first Blue Ridge, we both had bandoliers across our chest.
Loading one at a time, one round at a time.
Yeah, of course, just loading one at a time.
You know, probably still half of them hit the ground.
It's like, had that bandolier somewhere.
Well, I mean, shoot, Brian Vaught, you still use your California caddies.
Yeah, I'm just too lazy. I'm lazy.
But I mean, you load them like a champ. Like, I mean, you probably load them faster than some people still quad load.
I don't drop as many shells. I did have some quad loaders at one point, and I tried to do that a few times, and I was like, I got tired of picking up. I was in my gun room. I got tired of like reaching under my treadmill to get all the shells that I dropped. So I was like, screw this, you know. And I don't really have to, at this point, I don't have to practice or warm up. I can just pick it up. You know, I used to, before a big match, all I would do is go into my room and load my shotgun.
Mm-hmm.
I'd load my shotgun every other day for just a few minutes. I wouldn't wear my thumb out or anything for a week or two before a match, because I always felt that was, you know, that was something I'd make some time on. But, and I couldn't practice doing very much else in my basement. And now I don't even do that. You know,
It's kind of gone the same for me. Like, I was going to practice quad loading. Like, I did some dry fire practice, but that was more just pointing at targets and stuff like that. And I was going to practice quad loading. But, you know, whenever somebody was like, you're probably only going to have like one or two quad loads, I was like, okay, I don't have to worry about practicing that. And then, you know, we're shooting three-man three gun. And one of the videos I'm watching, like, it was the one, it was stage one, which was our third stage of the match. And mm-hmm. I started out with the quad load, and I'm like, that was actually a really good quad load, and it was decently fast.
You kind of surprised yourself, huh?
I did. We're kind of getting into the evolution. You know, what has it been like seeing the sport evolve for you guys from when you guys first started until how it is today, and like even Three Gun Nation years?
Brian, you want to take that one first?
What I remember from the first Blue Ridges and the first Pro-Ams and some of those, what I would call majors and Texas multi-gun and so forth, is they were as much as a social event and a party as they were a match almost. And to some degree in the first Pro-Am, a lot of people couldn't even believe they were getting to do this stuff. I mean, so that's very early on. And I think the ultra competitiveness that later came with some of, like you were talking about, the pro series, and then, you know, just everybody getting better in the evolution of tech and polishing kind of the techniques to find the best way to do things. I mean, the gear is so much better. I mean, it's not even close. I mean, and I think it, I don't know if it takes some of the, I don't want to say takes some of the fun out of it, but certainly a lot of the folks at the beginning weren't worried about who was going to win. They were just worried about finishing. That was my first several years. I just worried about not timing out on stages, you know?
We've talked about this driving
the first few years though.
Yeah. We've talked about this driving home for matches even recently of how gear has changed so much. And it's not now about how fast can you shoot something, or I'm sorry, now it's about how fast you can shoot something. And back then it was like, man, I hope my rifle runs, because you saw so many guns back then of all three that just that people had malfunctions on every stage, and it was like they were willing to accept that that's just part of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then that one of the other big things that changed, we never shot the old CMMG match.
Okay.
Which later kind of rolled into the Ozark three gun. But I can remember right after we started shooting, that next year, I think it was CMMG had their match, and they used to use a lot of paper targets for pistol. It rained all weekend, pain in the ass, pacing targets. So the next year they come up and start using these like 5x5 and 6x6 steel knockovers for pistol targets. And the bitching was just unsufferable because this was like the first time people have seen little knockovers for pistol targets. And so many people were still shooting, you know, three white dot combat type sights that they were leaving all these plates because they're so much harder to hit. You know, who would have ever thought about putting a 5-inch pistol target at 15 yards that you have to shoot with a handgun? And those are the things now we take for granted. It's like, if you're going to show up to a match, you better be able to hit a 5x5 out to about 20 or 25 yards.
Mm-hmm.
But back then it was, it was just unheard of. And they only did that because of the rain out the year before and dealing with paper pistol targets. So that kind of caused the shift to mostly steel pistol. And that's another one of those things. I mean, the guys that have been around it for long enough to remember those kinds of stories, but anybody newer, they just show up and they see these 5-inch targets out there at 18 yards. And they think that's just part of it. And I guess I need to figure out how to do it, but.
Right. No, that's
Dawson Precision sold a lot of sights after that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Well, it's kind of funny how the competition, and it still does today, but you know, competition has really evolved industry and what they do, you know, like we're going to introduce this. Well, we better start putting this out so this can kind of accommodate everybody. And then they make a lot of money off of it.
Yeah.
But,
well, I can think some of the optics that you saw were all 1.25x4 loophole. Like, and so there wasn't hardly any true other than Swarovski making the true one power. I can't think of another 2-1 power back then. Can you?
There was that IRO pit bull that was a 1 or a 4 that was, right. But it was pricey. I mean, it was like $1,400 or something. And we're talking, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010, somewhere in there. And hardly mm-hmm. anybody used them, even though it was cool. But yeah, you're right, Brian. Most of them, the loophole doll was either a 1.25 or 1.5 to 4. And Weaver had one, but nobody had dedicated optics. Trigicon came out with that 1 to 4 AccuPoint, but mm-hmm. there was no Stadia in the reticle. So, you know, it's like this big triangle and you just kind of figure out where to hold it. Of course, you know, we're also talking about back in the time when we shot either TAC or limited, and limited was iron sights. There were no red dots. Red dots weren't allowed. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's really amazing to think in the 13, 14, 15 years we've been shooting and how much the game has changed.
So you guys mainly competed in TAC irons and TAC limited the majority of your career. It wasn't really up until recently that you kind of started using LVPOs. What really drew you guys to shooting TAC limited?
You want me to go ahead? Okay. I started shooting heavy metal. And and then when Three Gun Nation Pro Series came out and they started, I shifted to TAC optics then, and haven't shot just a few locals, I think, is about all I shot heavy metal at since then. So that was for me, that was what caused me to shift from heavy.
What about you, Brian? Because you were the one who was, weren't you the one, Brian Vaught, you were the one who kind of, you know, shot irons most of the time.
Well, and I shot when you could shoot true irons. I really enjoyed that, and I still have rifles that are decked out with a, you know, with a clamp-on gas block out at the end of a 20-inch barrel with a .034 national match sight on the end of it. And then when they went to dots, when they started allowing dots, you know, I threw a fit and said that was ridiculous. They're ruining TAC irons. And then I put a dot on my rifle. And it's a lot better. But, most of your targets are within 3, right? So I don't think it's a disadvantage at distance to have a true irons gun, but it's so much faster to acquire your your other targets that it just makes up the difference. But I still shoot some. I mean, I think I shot dead zero in Tennessee. I shot irons last fall. You know, I still have all those and so forth. But it's just that you go to some of these matches, they don't even have a division for it. And, like, you shoot a running gun or something like that, and there's no divisions, mm-hmm. you know, other than your gear that you're carrying. So, and Brian makes good points. Like, we went to Blue Ridge last year at in South Carolina, never shot there before. And he's like, you know, we've never been there before, and the targets might not be easy to see. And you know how frustrated you get when you show up and you can't find the targets, and because they're in the woods somewhere, or the shadows or whatever. And so, you know, there's just things like that.
And whenever you go to paint the targets, which it only gets painted one time, Andy Horner gives you a can of gray spray paint.
Been there, done that.
You only got to paint it once.
Match directors now, I mean, they got 7 people shooting limited, mm-hmm. and they got 150 people shooting tac optics. They're not going to make all the targets limited friendly, and I don't blame them. I mm-hmm. mean, you're going to put backers behind every target so the 6 guys that brought a dot can see it, or are you going to put more stuff out there and spend your time trying to, you know, basically make it shootable for the majority of your shooters, which is what I would do. So that's kind of understandable.
So you guys have shot a lot of big matches over the years, and I'm sure like your training regimen back then is a lot different than what it is now. What was it like then compared to how you do today? Because I have a feeling nowadays you just kind of like, I'm going to make sure my zero is good. I'm going to maybe do some dry fire practice and, you know, I'm good. But what did you used to do?
We used to actually practice. We would go out before a match, and of course every match has its flavor, and you kind of get an idea of each one. And so FN for one, you know, you'd practice shotgun plates at distance and pistol plates at different distance, because a lot of those stages would have options, and you wanted to be confident in your abilities to be able to pick the best option rather than use that as a crutch and say, well, I'm only confident using my pistol at distance for instance. You know, and then the other matches, you might really practice transitions, you know, fire a couple rounds of one gun on one kind of target, dump it, pick up the next, you know, try to make sure that your splits are not incredibly far apart for your transitions. And that's what we did a lot back then. And now it's you're right. It's check a zero, make sure the zero is good. And you know, hope that it's like riding a bike.
Which, I mean, if our performance this past weekend has shown us anything, it kind of is like riding a bike. You know, you kind of get in your comfortable groove and then you just perform. It's muscle memory.
I think you're right. Other than when you think about, you know, as tight as scores are, especially on a match like this, mm-hmm. and you know, what would 2% have done? And I didn't look at the scores in depth to see if our performance as a team, if we had shot 2% faster, would that have moved us up one spot or would it move us up 2 spots? I don't know. But as everybody has gotten better, that margin has become tighter and tighter and tighter.
Well, and, I know.
I can remember in the Three Gun Nation Pro Series days where you would actually look at stage scores and you would see within one match of 5 stages, you would see multiple ties to the 100th of a second. You know, so if you think about it that way and you're like, wow, you know, over the course of a match, if I pick up 500s on each stage, I mean, that might end up being 2 spots in the overalls. So now it's not that important. And we've got other things to do and we're just going to show up and have fun.
Yeah.
Those are short stages too. I mean, you would never go shoot those stages. Like that wouldn't be a match you'd go to. It wouldn't be a match you'd take vacation time to go shoot.
No. Well, I mean, I know if we didn't get that one penalty that I kind of caused us to have, like we would have been in 3rd place.
Ah, so what?
I mean, but it's kind of like, well, shit, but you know what? We had a great freaking time. And that's, I mean, laughing, joking, socializing. It was, you know, it was probably one of the most stress-free matches that I've had in a long time. And it was great.
Yep.
So, you know,
we, so that's a good segue. And I know we're going all over the place with your list of questions.
Yeah.
But, the first year, Brian, I shot that. What was that? What did we figure, Brian, around 2014 or 15? Mm-hmm. Yeah. We flew up, we shot. And at that time, that was kind of like right at the, right before the breakover of the popularity of three gun. And there were people that flew in from all over the country to shoot Dean's match. Mm-hmm. And it was 8 stages that year, but we shot, we flew out, and on the flight back, we're chit-chatting and we go, this is incredible. This was an awesome format. You know, it's so much fun. It's engaging, not just for the person that's on the clock, but now you got 3 on the clock that's engaging, plus the squad, because it's so entertaining to watch. And Brian and I had a conversation and we said, you know, we need to bring this to Kentucky, because at the time we were running some local stuff at Rock Castle, and I don't remember the month. The first year we did our 3-man three gun at Rock Castle was the same year we shot Dean's. So if Dean's was in June, ours must have been like September, October, November.
Yeah, it was September, October, I think.
Yeah, so we threw a 3-gun match together, a 3-man three gun, and coached a bunch of our local ROs, because, you know, nobody around here had shot that stuff before. And obviously there's a lot of things that you can't use precedent from one-man matches to deal with. So we kind of coached ROs through it and put a match on, and everybody just had a fantastic time.
We had 16 teams the first year.
Okay.
16 teams.
Yeah, but when we told them all, we were like, hey, we had so much fun because of Dean Duterte. We want to bring that spirit to Kentucky. And mm-hmm. and we did it for 5 years after that and ended up with what we run, 50 teams the next 4 years?
52 or 54 or something, I think, the last year. All we wanted was 50, but I think we ended up taking some extra teams. So
no, it's a great format, and it's a lot of fun just to see, you know, how people interact and come up with different stage ideas to run and just watch them burn it down.
Yeah. Yeah. That's by far, I think that's the most spectator friendly three gun that we've ever seen.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Because people are like, what are they doing? And then they kind of see it put together and they're like, that's fucking cool.
Or it's a train wreck. Either way.
Yeah. Well, I like how you guys described it. Like, you know, you guys go there to see who's gonna mess up the most and kind of like fall on their faces, or, you know, guns go down, and it's like, all right.
That is us this last week, is that we get done with the stage, right? And I go, what was our time? And nobody knows. Like, we have not even known what our time is. We left stages without knowing what our time was.
Yeah.
And you would never do that, like, in a regular three-gun match, right? And that's one of the things I liked about when we did our team event, is people left the stages, and they didn't even know what their penalties were, what their time was, because they didn't care, because they were, like, laughing their asses off. You know,
yep.
So something bad happened. And if it's something bad happened, that made better video than if something good happened. Right.
Yep.
So anyway, it was always a lot of fun. And we always got a lot of free beer out of it. I do remember that too.
After we get done with the stage, like you said, I wouldn't ask what the time was, you know, the only time I was like, what was whenever the, like, yeah, your first shooter missed that target right there. I was like, wait, what? No, I didn't. Like, you did. I'm like, let me see this video. I'm just like, son of a bitch, I did.
Well, I know you put that on yourself, but it's funny. You know, after you're like, oh, guys, I'm so sorry. I was telling Brian, I was like, man, I feel terrible. I said, I was kind of spaced out when he was shooting, and I didn't even pay any attention that he had a miss.
I feel some
of that burden on myself that I didn't call you out.
Well, you know, so I was looking at the video, and like, this is my way of creating an excuse for missing that target or not even realizing I missed. When I shot that target, the next bay was also shooting steel.
Oh, right.
So I heard a gunshot and I just kept going. That's my excuse.
Whatever. First year we caught that in 2014, I was first in this relay type stage. Mm-hmm. And there was a big pile of mulch and they had some shotgun targets kind of behind it, but they were up above it where you could see just the plates. And I burned through these four and mulch goes everywhere. I shot mm-hmm. in front of them, I guess. And I dumped the shotgun on the table and I take off. Now my two teammates are right here. They're right on my elbow. And it was Brian and Andrew. And we had never done this before, obviously. And so we get to the end, and we had 20 seconds in penalty because I left two plates out of the four. I shot a bunch of shit in front of them and picked up a bunch of dirt. And they were like, hey, man, you missed those two plates. And we were like, we got to coach better after this. Like, we really need to talk. Because they saw it but didn't stop me. And I was right there. They could have said, no, don't put your shotgun. It still had four rounds in it. You know, I shot. But so some of that's on your teammate. I mean, obviously, we should be checking. And they told us when we walked through that, we will not call pistol hits. Your teammates should be doing that for you. But yeah, obviously we're, I don't know. I was thinking about something at home maybe, or
thinking about that tornado that was about to come through. I got to ask this. Like, you guys have been traveling for many, many years. How have your wives put up with all the shenanigans and all the travel over the years?
Which one? Which wife? No, I'm just kidding.
Brian, I think it helps with them being sisters. You know, they hang out not just when we're gone, and them knowing that we're together and doing the same thing makes a lot of things around the house easier.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm just curious. You know, my wife is actually, you know, she's been dealing with it for 10 years, and it's like, you're gone again. You're leaving this weekend. When are you going to be home? I don't know.
Well, and there's that's a little different than your situation previously, in that, you know, all of ours is rec based. Yeah. So, you know, at some point you're kind of like, if she starts letting me know that this is an issue, mm-hmm. the only choice I have of going, okay, I'm not going to go shoot a match until things are better, because it's just recreation. I mean, it's not, there's no obligation here. So,
yeah. And that's a situation I'm kind of in now. Like, yeah, like there's certain matches I have now that are like, I'm committed to this. Like, I've set a goal, I'm going to do this, but any of the fat on the side that I don't need to go to, I'm just not going to do it, because it's like, all right, I know where my priorities are now. Like,
yeah,
I've been doing this for so long. For the last 5 years while I was on the team, it was an obligation. And now it's just fun.
Well, and some of our stuff was close to home. All the events we did at Rockcastle are about an hour from us. So yeah, we've traveled to several other states and flown different matches and so forth. But there was a portion of those events that were close to home. And I mean, every year my kids were in high school that I was RO in Blue Ridge, it was always soccer district tournament time. And I would always tell everybody else all the ROs on my stage, I'd say, my kid's game starts at 7. So I got to be out of here by 5:30, no matter what. And Andy would be on with that too. He's like, you need to get out of here, you know? And I'm like, this is my last shooter. I'd run the last shooter at 5:25 and I'd jump in my truck and drive to E-Town and be at the soccer game by the time the gates open, you know? So we had an advantage to, even though we were away from home, we weren't always, you know, if you had to be home that evening, you could go home and get up early in the morning and still make it back to the match for a lot of those matches. So
yeah. And I mean, you know, that's a great thing about that community there. It's like, we had enough people, you know, to do that type of stuff. And it's like, hey, I got to bounce out of here. I got this going on. Can you take over? And they'd be like, yeah, sure, go ahead.
But we did spend about, I think my wife told me, I think I spent 32 days away from home one season, which that's quite a few. That's mm-hmm. probably the busiest that we had. But anyway, you couldn't do it now.
Yeah. So the Three Gun Nation Pro Series, that was a big deal whenever it was in its heyday. You know, there'd be crowds of people, camera crews, people interviewing you. How would you guys prepare for your prepare yourselves mentally for those matches? And Brian Ray, we'll start with you on that.
The mental really wasn't a lot different than the you know, any other match. And at that point, we had been shooting majors long enough that you know, you could get your head wrapped around, I got to have a game plan. I got to be able to walk it through my head enough times that, you know, when the buzzer goes off, it's autopilot. The pressure really with those matches wasn't even as much as the TV production around the match, as much as it was knowing, kind of like I mentioned earlier, that every hundredth of a second was important, because mm-hmm. the level of competition was so great. Now, we knew going into them that Daniel Horner, Greg Jordan, Keith Garcia, you know, and a couple other guys were going to win. Mm-hmm. One of them was going to win, but, you know, fighting it out in the like the 25th to 50th place was going to be so tight that, you know, one extra shot on a stage, it's like, it's going to drop you six or eight places overall. And so the production component of those matches really wasn't, I never really felt like there was a lot of pressure at that. You know, even when, as soon as you're still out of breath and you're coming off the line, you just unload show clear and, you know, camera and the microphone's in your face and they want to interview you, ask how it went. At least at that point, you're not on the clock. So mm-hmm. you can take just a minute and take a breath and talk to them. But, the level of competition was incredible in those early days, because, you know, it really was the best shooters and hundreds of a second, you know. You'd make a half of a misstep, which would put you in a position where after you know, let's say you came into position, you're half a step too far into it. And after you stop, you have to lean back. You're like, that just cost me, you know, that cost me 0.2. That's huge.
Mm-hmm.
And that I think was the big difference. But as far as preparation goes, you know, you'd go out and you'd practice offhand rifle, and you'd practice loading the shotgun. You practice shooting the shotgun on the move. I mean, there's all those things that we were doing for other matches anyway.
Brian Vaught.
Well, every time that Three Gun Nation or something like that tries to get together 50 or so of the best shooters, they can't find 50 that are going to be there. So there's always got to be 15 other shooters that are showing up to fill the last little bit of the 50 best shooters. Like, these are the 35 best shooters, and then here's some 15 that are here too. And, you know, maybe they'll do something stupid. We'll catch it on film and it'll make the B-reel or something, you know? And so that'd be me. And I was never good at any of that kind of shooting. I mean, the really, really fast. I don't move fast. I don't take off fast. I don't stop fast. I mean, I can hit targets, but that kind of fluidity that it took to do that, I don't really know that I could, unless I just really put in a whole lot of work back then, could I have got anywhere near good enough to do that. So I never did very well at that. And it was very frustrating for me. But I mean, could I call myself in the same league as those guys? No. I mean, and did I know why I was there? Yes, I was there because I qualified. But I mean, I got in like right under, you know, the rug, and I got a little, you know, camera time a couple times doing like an instructional thing for how to shoot a pistol stage with one of their hosts one time. And if you watch the video now, like, it was so slow, you know, because I could do it so much. I could do it faster now, but I mean, back then I was so slow. So I actually think I got to be a better shooter after that was over, by just enjoying it more. The best matches I ever had were matches where I wasn't pressured to perform. I had no pressure on myself to perform. You know, those were the best matches I ever had, where I just shot lights out above what I normally would shoot, were matches where I just showed up and got my stuff out of my bag and shot, you know, shot stages.
That's
shoot
awesome.
Well in the rain. I don't know why, but
you guys have been shooting for a long time. You guys have been traveling together for a long time. You guys have been married to the, you know, your spouses for a long time. So you guys, you know, you guys have a lot of shared history. How has that relationship evolved over time?
We've started to recognize that each other has probably heard the same story before. So now when we start to tell that story, we say, I've probably told you this before, but...
It's like hearing the same joke and you have to be polite, you know, but sometimes I don't know, maybe it is a different story, you know, because if it starts with, you know, I was shooting, remember when we were shooting that match, that could mean, that could be a lot of different things. I mean, that could be, and so sometimes you have to get a third of the way through before you realize you heard it before, and by that it's too late.
Well, and Brian's memory,
Pennsylvania anyway, so.
Brian's memory is a lot better than mine because he'll say, you remember at Blue Ridge 1 year, you remember at FN 1 year, you remember Pro-Am 1 year. And he's like, there's that stage, and he'll describe the stage and I'll go, nope, I don't remember a thing about it.
At this point I can make shit up and he doesn't even know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know.
So, no, but I really do think that has helped with our relationship as brother-in-laws, and then also being involved so long in shooting sports and having the same type of interest with the shooting sports. You know, we both really enjoy technically difficult matches rather than burner stages and all. And I think that us having the same similar interest has really helped in that, you know, you got that, you know, you got your travel partner with you, you got your teammate with you. You know, Samson and Double Star both have sponsored us for a decade now, I guess. And that just really helps with it's a team. It really is a team, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't hurt that we live 7 or 8 miles from each other. So,
no. And I'm ever asked to put the invisible fire out on Brian Ray, I'm the teammate to do it. I got to tell you, that's a teammate right there.
Thank you, Tom Cruise.
I think I'd be the one to fan the fire. If we were ever in the truck, I'd just start stoking that flame. And you'd be like, man, shut up. But three-man three-gun has been a staple three-gun match in the community for a while. You know, I've shot it for the past 4 years in a row. And this year has been the first year that you've two shot in a while. You know, would you say it has evolved over time from the early years, or has the concept more or less remained the same? Brian Vaught?
I'd say it was the same.
Yeah.
I'd say it was the same. And I'd say it was the same, not as a critique. Not as a critique at all. In fact, when we put on team events, we didn't vary a whole lot. There were stages we brought back every year, and there were stages that we would have got probably everybody pissed off at us had we not brought them back every year, because you only really get to do that kind of thing. You know, it takes a certain place, a certain kind of match director to do it. And so I felt like the flavor was very similar. It was a few less stages, and maybe they were a little longer than some of the stages we shot in the past. But I think the flavor was the same. I think you could have stuck any of those stages into the first one we shot, and they would have fit right in with those. But you don't mess with – I mean, you can mess with a good formula and screw it up. And I think that's what those folks that came to that match – I think we all got what we were hoping for.
Mm-hmm.
What I think we got. What do you think?
It's hard without a whole lot of precedent of a three-man team matches. You know, it's hard to know that your ideas, if they're that much different than what's been done before, are actually going to work. Because mm-hmm. we had a couple hiccups in the 5 years we ran three-man matches that, you know, there would be some instance happen on a stage with a team and you go, wow, I did not see that as a possibility. And so now you got to deal with it. And so some of the issue there is if you get too far outside of what's been done, and Dean has done almost all of it, you know, because there was another, I'm aware of another three-man three-gun match. I don't remember if it was at Peacemaker back again, 14 or so, but other than that, it's pretty much just been Topton. And so if he hasn't done it, you know, there might be a good reason why. And if you start trying to reinvent that wheel, you know, it's likely all the spokes are going to fall off. So it's a fun format in the way it is. And I think that because of trying to incorporate all three shooters in every stage with some kind of variation of guns, you know, you kind of got to stick to a little bit narrower pattern for those stages than otherwise. If it was a single man match and you can try something, you go, well, hey, that didn't work out like we thought it was. But there's a lot less unknowns than when you're dealing with three people.
Mm-hmm. And you could kind of tailor who's going to shoot what based off their strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah. And the other years we shot Topton, and I was thinking about this yesterday or day before, the other years we shot Topton and then at the match Brian and I used to run, we always had a stage where it was only one pistol array, one shotgun array, one rifle array, and of course three shooters, and you had to determine who, maybe even on a given day, you know, the match we just shot after our first stage, the way Brian shot pistol, you know, it's going through my head. It's like, wow, when we get to that stage where it's only one rifle, one pistol, one shotgun, Brian is our pistol sniper because mm-hmm. he shot pistol so well on that first stage. And then unfortunately this year, we didn't have that stage where you only had one of each of the guns. But I think that was probably the only thing I really kind of missed from that certainly isn't from a shooting enjoyment standpoint. That's from a strategery
mm-hmm.
to use George W. Bush's word, a strategery standpoint is I missed having that stage where we got to pick, you know, who's the guy for the rifle, who's the guy for the pistol. So
yeah, and you know, talking about that and thinking back, I think this is one of the first years he hasn't had that. In previous years, they have always had it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And kind of think about it, yeah, I kind of miss that because it's like that really sets teams apart because that's a stage that the wheels are either going to stay together or just come completely apart.
That's true, especially when all three of you shooting at the same time. You know, mm-hmm. I don't remember the stage number. It was the one where I was going to be the guy in the center position. It was the one where you two shot shotgun on the left, I shot pistol, and in the center, I think I shot shotgun and you all shot pistol.
Yeah, that was stage one.
Yep.
And on the right, we all shot rifle. But yep. Any shotgun targets and some of the doubles. And even watching the video, I went back on it and I looked at it. I'm like, you know, man, I feel like I dropped the ball on that one because you all shot 30% more rounds than I did. And of course, that kind of all meshes into the stage and you don't really notice that. But if it's only one person shooting at a time, you're right. That's where it comes down to. You know, if one person doesn't perform as well as they're expected to, then it's really obvious.
And I think that's a beautiful
opportunity to blame that person too for fucking it up for everybody else, which is unfortunate because that's part of the team experience is to blame somebody for something. But, you know, and I said that the whole ride home. I was like, damn it, I wish we had a scapegoat.
You know, thinking about what you were just talking about, it's like I, you know, watching those videos, I feel the same way. I was like, man, I wish I could have shot a lot better on some of these stages. And it's like you guys shot a lot cleaner, it felt like. And I think it comes natural with the whole team match. It's like everybody's going to feel like they let the other team member down. I think it's just natural for that.
Well, you hope, yeah. You hope that you're shooting with people that have that kind of attitude
mm-hmm.
rather than shooting with people that at the end of it, they're like, man, you really let us down. Or, you know, I was a rock star at this match and I don't know what you all were doing, mm-hmm. you know? So no, you're right. You hope that you're shooting with those kind of people, like the attitudes we had of, you know, boy, I wish I could have pulled my weight a little better, but
yeah. But
that never crossed my mind.
How'd y'all prep for this match? I mean, I know whenever I went out and I was shooting the few times I went and shot prior to it, I just kind of focused. I knew it was stand and deliver match, you know, it always is. And you want to shoot fast and aggressive and accurate. And that's kind of how I trained for it. How did you guys prepare?
We drove to North Carolina 2 weeks before and shot Dusk and Three Gun.
Better do it.
That was a good match in and of itself. But you guys, I mean, you guys, you know, you shot great and probably got beat up a bit.
Yeah, this was.
I was just recovering from that, so there was not going to be any preparation for the. For the three-man event, because I was still sore from the Duskin event. Mm-hmm. Bruises all over me. But anyway.
You know, Matt, and you ask that, kind of like you mentioned, you knew it was Stand to Deliver, and that has never been Brian or my strong suit, and is that, you know, flat-footed, shoot these targets as fast as you can. And only having 2 weeks between matches and not – I mean, I'll be honest, not a whole lot of motivation to practice a whole lot now anyway. It was one of those things that we know is going into it. That's what it's going to be, sight picture, trigger press, you know, transition. And we kind of closed our eyes and hope for the best.
Well, I think we did well for the amount of preparation we put into it.
Yeah. No, I would agree.
And we had a lot of fun doing it. I mean, if you look at it, but look at the stats. There was what, 33, 34 teams, and we came out in fifth. Like, that ain't half bad for a bunch of guys who don't really necessarily practice much anymore.
I tell you, I don't want to sound like a communist, but you know, this is really one of those matches. It's like, if they didn't keep score, yeah, I'd still shoot it, because yeah, it's just that much fun.
Yeah. Right. No, absolutely. Right. Man, if they got rid of the prize table, I would still come out and shoot it. You know,
yeah, but thank you for Vortex.
Yeah.
Donating those binoculars that we want.
Yeah. So, and I hope those who got the Samson handguards and that prizes, I hope they enjoy those.
I'm sure they will.
Yeah. So my favorite stage of this match was the one where we kind of leapfrogged back and forth. That was a different dynamic. Like, you know, you're running down, running back, running down, and like just tagging your partner and hoping for the best that nobody gets out of sequence. And it was funny because I was talking to George Dorbert today, and he was like, yeah, that was my favorite stage. Like, that was a very well put together and thought out stage. And it's like, what was y'all's?
I really liked that one. And to pick a favorite, that would probably be it. I also liked the one where we moved from table to table. You all started, you're going to have to help me, Matt. Was that stage one?
Yeah.
Okay. I really like that one because not even as much shooting it, but when we were in the bay next to it and mm-hmm. somebody else was shooting it, the sound that made from three people shooting, you know, between two shotguns and one pistol, and then two pistols and one shotgun, and then three rifles all going off simultaneously. I loved listening to that stage.
Oh, yeah. It sounded like it was just a straight up firefight going off.
I think either one or two were my favorite because those were the Fast and Furious steel Garden of Steel stages. And that's my favorite kind of, if I'm just going to stand in one spot and shoot two guns that are on a table in front of me at multiple steel targets, that to me is it with, there's a bit of teamwork in that too. There's kind of that, you know, focusing in on what's left. And I don't know. I just kind of, you can feel that everybody's going as fast as they can. You're going as fast as they can. And the two guys next to you are going as fast as you can. And I think that's just kind of neat. Plus there's a lot of dust kicking up, paint and lead flying, waddings hitting targets and flying in the air and so forth. So to me, that's the best kind of stage.
I just remember getting to the last position whenever we were all shooting rifle, and Brian Ray was like, move over, move over, move over. And then I get done shooting. I'm like, thanks for that reminder, because I would have been in a sea of brass there, because like we were all right next to each other on that table. And it's like, yeah, that would have been some burned skin right there.
Well, you know, I don't have a whole lot of original thoughts, but I'm really observant. And I know the team we saw in the squad in front of us, you know, we saw several guys get just pelted with hot brass. And then it was JK's team. we saw the guy shift three good steps far to the right, and I thought, that guy knows what's going on, and we need to do that too.
So Samson and Double Star have been involved with the shooting sports for a good amount of time. They've been supporting you guys for about 10 years. And the three of us both represent Double Star. And, you know, you guys also represent Samson. What drew you to those companies, and what has continuously had you guys come back to represent them?
Go ahead, Brian.
It's funny. I was having this conversation with a business associate just today about how our customers in business are not as much based on performance or pricing as it is relationships. And really, I think that's a lot of why we have been associated with Double Star and Samson both for so long, is just the relationship. You know, I texted Scott Samson today, just cutting up with him. And we talked to Nick Collier here and there, and just, you know, if nothing else, send him a funny meme or something. And it really just comes down to, you know, we do have this, the association through Three Gun, but it's much more than that. It's actually about just being friends. And, mm-hmm. you know, we'll drive through Winchester and text Nick and say, hey, can we stop by the shop and just, you know, chit chat a little bit. And so, you know, on the way to a match, we'll take an hour and a half out of the day and stop and see Nick and Jesse and Stacy and all the guys at Double Star. So it's always been greatly appreciated that the support they have given us in Three Gun, but more so than that, we consider them all good friends.
No, that's awesome. Brian Vaught.
Yeah, and we go to SHOT Show. I guess it's been our 10th year going to SHOT Show.
It's at least
something like that. And we stay at the booth. We don't work. I mean, you know, we're not employees or at all. And we go to the booth and we hang out for the whole week, and our wives go and hang out in the casinos. And sometimes they make it through the day, sometimes not, but we've done that for a number of years, and that's always been kind of a retreat for us and everybody else that's there. It's in the gun industry. That's not what we do for a living. So for us, it's almost a vacation or fun, and we really enjoy it. And
it's the only reason why your wives keep, it's the only reason why your wives keep you shooting.
It is a big perk, you know, because when you were talking about how do our wives put up with this, I think maybe it was year one or two into this, and she was like, you're gone an awful lot. And then we went to SHOT Show and we hung out at the booth and we stayed. I can't remember where we stayed the first couple of years, but she was like, this is okay. And I was like, you know, and I think she bought a Louis Vuitton purse. I think that was maybe part of the selling point. But anyway, you know, they were somewhat involved, got to meet Scott and Kathy, got to meet some of the people from Double Star, you know, that kind of stuff, and realized it was what kind of folks we were hanging out with, you know?
No, that's awesome. Well, I do appreciate this. And before we cut out of here, is there anything that you guys would like to say to any of the listeners before we cut out? Brian Vaught, we'll start with you.
Matt, thanks for having us on. And thanks for being such a really good teammate this last weekend. I really, really enjoyed it. I know we'll shoot together again soon. Brian Ray, thanks for coming over and helping me clean the tornado damage out of my yard 2 days ago. And I'll probably see you for supper one day in the next week or two, or come hang out at the pool. I know that I left some beers in your cooler. I hope that you haven't drank them yet, because I'm out. But that's all I'll say.
I think that's a good invitation to go over to his house.
They may or may not still be there. I don't know.
I bet they're not.
This is not one of yours right here.
Brian Ray.
I would say, you know, to anybody listening that's involved with the shooting sports, whether it's you know, IDPA, USPSA, steel challenge, three gun, whatever. The only way that any of this exists is because of volunteers. And if you're a consumer and you show up and you pay your match fee, which other than major matches is dirt cheap. I mean, what's it cost to shoot a local USPSA match? You know, 15 or 20 bucks anywhere you go.
Yep.
But if you're a consumer and you show up and you pay that match fee and you shoot your stages and you pack your shit up and you go home and you show up next month and you do the same thing, then don't be surprised when match directors quit and ranges close and ROs aren't around because you're not helping continue this sport. And, you know, there's been different involvement over the years that Brian and I have done. And we've even worked matches that we swore not three gun that we swore we would never go to again. But, you know, we showed up for the first one and we helped wherever they needed us help. And that's what it takes to continue all of the practical shooting sports, because there's no paid position. So if you love your sport, whichever sport it is, give back a little bit. You don't have to volunteer to be a match director. You don't have to RO every month. RO every 3 months. You know, if you can do more, that's fantastic. But I know that one of our local clubs now suffers this issue of there's 70 people that show up to shoot the local match every month, and there's four people that actually, you know, design the stages and build everything. Now, they have made some changes to get some more involvement with teardown, but you know, still it's so much work. It's so much work putting on matches. And if you like doing this, then you need to give back a little bit to helping out.
No, that's very well said. And it's absolutely true. You know, I wouldn't say I support the way I used to. I mean, things change. Thing, you know,
they do, but you've supported in the past, right?
Oh yeah.
So if we don't always have to have the same level of commitment to this, you know, you don't
That's
always have you,
problem.
You certainly don't want you certainly don't want the same level of commitment from everybody over time, because otherwise nothing really changes. But
yeah.
But if there's never that new group of people that are stepping up and going, hey, you know, let me help stage design and build the next 3 months. Then, you know, if it's a cycle and there's always new people that are coming into it, then it gives an opportunity for those people who are getting a little bit tired of doing it to step out and you know, take a little back seat and for them to just show up and just pay their fee and just shoot a match and enjoy it and remember why they love it, because they're not being worked to death.
Oh, yeah. Well, I do appreciate this. I appreciate you guys coming on. And to the listeners, I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you were as entertained as I was. And we hope you keep on listening. Have a great night, guys.
Thank you, Matt.
Yeah.
Thanks, Matt.